Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right, we are back with another episode of the Real Estate Investing Club. Today we have Steve Rosenberg with us. Steve is a retired commercial airline pilot who moved into real estate as a property manager. And since then, he has gone into pretty much everywhere you can be in real estate now doing coaching. So Steve has a lot of experience that I'm super excited to talk about. Steve, thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thanks, Gabe, for having me. One quick thing. I still am an airline pilot. So I still do this as I do everything else. Yeah.
Jesus, that's even more impressive.
Yeah.
Very cool. So I guess let's get started with your story. I told you before we got on here, we like to start with stories. So how'd you get started in real estate?
You know, mine was probably like other people. It was not voluntary. I got furloughed from 9/11 being an airline pilot. And the quick story is I had to figure out what I was going to do with my life because I was on the street with 50,000 other pilots. You know, a lot of wealth that I started reading, going into that big building with books called the library, because we didn't have YouTube back then. I just learned that a lot of people were tied to wealth via real estate. And so I didn't know anything about it. I just thought, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. I read a book a week for about a year, learned everything I could. I thought I had the keys to success. I was going to go kill it. Went out there and I got ripped off, lied to, cheated, stomped in the face. And
welcome to real estate.
Yeah, basically. And I just realized this is a different world than the prim and proper airline industry of, you know, trusting everyone because they're professionals, quote unquote, and all that. So I learned my lessons, and I, you know, because I didn't have a choice, I kept getting back up and I kept learning, Eventually I was getting knocked down less than I was getting up. And all of a sudden I started having success and had a large portfolio, some apartments here in Houston, Texas, along with some houses, and needed the need of a property management company, which is why my business partner and I started a management company, which we didn't want to do. Took that, scaled it to over 1,000 properties in 3 different cities. Had 60% of our company with virtual assistants in Mexico. We ran our business the way airlines run. We ran it with systems, processes, and procedures because being an airline pilot, that's what we know. And we eventually sold it to a very large venture capital firm with about 10,000 properties. I became a vice president for them out of Silicon Valley and exited that whole deal. And now I do what I want to do, which is help other people learn how to build their lives and their systems and their businesses pretty much the way airlines run, which is pretty kind of my thing. And I still fly. So that's the quick version.
Yeah. I was going to say there's a lot more to it, I'm sure.
Yes.
But it is a story, you know, I never wish hard times upon people, but I feel like your story is very pertinent because anytime someone gets into real estate, you're going to get hit in the face. And that's just how it happens. It'll happen multiple times. And why I like your story is that you didn't give up. You kept standing up. You kept at it until you got to the point where, you know, you built your property management company, you've owned larger properties. And so it's just a testament to your ability to get back up. Love to hear that. A few questions popped out to me when you were kind of going through your story. The first one is just the furlough for 9/11. I didn't realize that many pilots lost their jobs during 9/11. Was it just because the demand for flights decreased?
Well, it was the demand for flights. It was a very knee-jerk reaction, which as business owners, we do sometimes because we didn't know what the industry was going to do. They didn't know if the airline industry was going to go back to being under government control and no longer privatized. You know, this was such, they used an airplane as a weapon and they had to basically rethink everything. So as businesses, they had to shed costs and expenses as quickly as they could. So pilots are the highest expense for an airline. So they just started cutting with an axe, and they needed to shrink to profitability because they came through the .com boom. It was already starting to bust. They were already seeing losses. And this was going to be a death blow to a lot of airlines. And so some airlines went out of business. So you had airlines that were out of business with pilots. You had other ones that said, we've got to shrink to profitability, which you never do, but that's what they wanted to try. So it was a lot of chaos, mayhem, and knee-jerk reaction, because it was the first time we had ever been attacked besides, you know, Pearl Harbor on American soil to this degree.
Yep. That makes sense. And I don't want to spend too much on you know, being a pilot, because, you know, we're here to talk about real estate, but I am interested. What is, you know, COVID happened, and I realize that, you know, the airline industry has been affected tremendously by that. Yeah. When do you think that the prices are going to go back to where they were pre-COVID?
I don't think they will. And the reason I say that is, you know, being a business owner, I look and I think COVID gave everybody the free pass to raise their prices because they can. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think what happened is they all these, everybody, you know, you did COVID packaging, you know, COVID price. So I think it gave the green light for any business to all of a sudden come back and say, we can charge whatever we want to charge. And yeah. So I don't, you know, when you look at the airlines, I mean, the biggest expenses you could imagine, fuel, staffing, other countries, export taxes, all of those land on an airline. So they're just going to pass the buck. So I don't want to get into a political conversation, but when we don't have oil and we don't have all these things and prices go up, the airlines don't shoulder that. They just pass it on. And yep. So that's what you're seeing. So, you know, in 1985, it cost $900 to fly from Los Angeles to Tokyo. It's wow. Still pretty close to that right now. Yeah. They just haven't raised the prices because there's more competition. But if they can raise the prices, like any business, you know, they say statistically you can raise your prices 9 times before you lose a customer. That's just the psychological side.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So that goes for rents. That goes for everything. You can do it 9 times statistically. So I look, they keep raising their prices. And what do? We keep buying. You go to the airport.
Well, you got to get to where you're going.
Yeah, right? When the planes are empty, then they're going to go, okay, we've hit the top. But until that happens, it's just like when you have a property. Until your properties are not occupied, you haven't hit the max that you can get from your rent.
Yep. Supply and demand.
Yep.
All right, moving on. Thank you for that little detour into the airline industry. That's super interesting. But back to real estate. You were talking about building a property management company. And you said you did that out of necessity. I'm assuming you guys own properties. Why weren't you looking for third-party property management? Were you not able to find good ones, or why did you not consider that?
We were the problem. We had such crappy properties that nobody wanted them. So we took the tact of buying these low income, quote unquote, high cash flow properties. The low income part was right. The high cash flow never materialized. And so when we tried to look for a third party contractor, they were all like, we don't want these. Mm. And so this was after 2008. This is like 2009. We bought them. We got great deals on them. The problem is there's attachments that come with those great deals. There's a dark side to real estate that people don't talk about. And I wish more people did. But we were in that dark side and we had to figure out solutions. And, you know, all business, all real estate is all about solutions. It's, you know, it's not the Instagram life that as you know, that people profess. But we had to come up with solutions. We tried interviewing companies. Nobody wanted them or the price points that they were going to charge us. They would have made us go bankrupt quicker than we could do it. And we were doing a pretty good job on our own because we had the wrong business model with our properties. So we did it out of necessity only because nobody wanted our properties, to be completely honest.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I'm glad you brought that up. You know, you call it the dark side. And I think that is pretty relevant because a lot of people, when they first get into real estate, they only want cash flow and they're only looking at numbers. They're not looking at the ancillary things that happen when you buy a property in a really bad area. You know, how are you going to manage it? Just like you said, a lot of property managers are not going to want to manage that property. And so you guys found the solution. You managed it yourself. I'm always interested to talk to property managers because, you know, I hire third party property managers and I feel like you guys are doing God's work out there. It is the hardest part of real estate is managing your properties, managing them to profitably and not with all these expenses. So when you started growing your property management business, what were the top three roadblocks that you had to overcome when you started to scale, when you started to put those processes in place?
Well, we used to joke and say that we were the trash men of the real estate industry. Nobody wanted us, but they needed us.
Yep.
jokingly, the three roadblocks are the owners, the tenants, and the contractors. But, true. You know, so here's the challenge. We had 1,000 properties, let's just say. And the problems we had at 100 properties or challenges were different challenges we had at 300 to 500. Whether it's, this is the challenge almost every, the majority of real estate investors do not understand is that they're running a business. It's not emotions. It's not their property. Yeah. It's four walls and a roof. It's the business model running inside the four walls and the roof. The property management owns the business model rights to that business if they're managing that property. And so number one, it's understanding this isn't your, this is your structure. It's our business. So there's an ideological difference. Some would say it's my house. It's your four walls and a roof. It's our business running inside of it. We've got to make sure that it's running legally. We got to make sure, you know, you've got the laws, rules, and regulations. The landlord is the highest suit in real estate because they don't understand they're running a business that's very, very highly regulated. And we've got tenant rights. We've got contractor rights. We've got IRS legal rights. It goes on and on. And so, you know, when I see new people that are getting into this, you know, a new acronym, short-term rentals, mid-term, whatever the term Burr, is they have today. Whatever it is, they don't understand the principles of running a business, the finances. And they kind of, you know, they think it's all about the acquisition side. Look, you can swing a dead cat and hit something eventually. Getting a good deal is not hard. Sustaining that deal day after day, week after week, year after year. And that's what the property management company's for. The biggest challenge that people have by getting a property management company is they go with the cheapest person. And I'll ask them, why did you hire that company? Because they always would come to us after they have a shit show going on. And they're like, they answered the phone first. I'm like, so you put all of your financial being into somebody that just happened to answer the phone? Did you interview them? Did you make sure that they were aligned with your business model? Oh, you don't have a business model. Okay. Excuse me. That's a bigger challenge. So again, everybody wants the property management company to do something, but property management company is all about service and it's about systems and procedures. The average business has anywhere between 8 and 11 systems. Property management company has 19. There's a lot of handoffs. There's a lot of systemization. There's a lot, you know, we're dealing with, you know, I used to say at the peak when we had about 1,000 properties, we had 1,000 property, we had 1,000 tenants, we had 1,000 owners, and we had about 300 contractors. Imagine being married to all of them and everybody has a different definition of happiness. And our job is to run it down the line for what the law says. Because when the dust settles, we're the ones sitting with the lawsuit or lack of, you know, licensing if we do something wrong.
Yep. And it's funny because that is the, you know, when I got my property manager, the thing, it is really hard to find good property managers.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that as the owner, as the, you know, the investor, that is one of the biggest jobs that you have is finding someone that you trust and that you get along with and that, you know, is really does have your best interests at heart to manage your properties. So question that I want to ask you is how would you suggest other investors find good property managers? And then on top of that, I'll just kind of put out how the process that I use to find mine. So you mentioned that you know, a lot of people you talk to, they pick up the phone and the first person that picks up the phone on the other end, that's the person they go with. Totally wrong way. In my opinion, I definitely interviewed multiple people, but something that I really benefited from was I asked the property manager if I could call their clients, their other clients. They'll give me a few numbers and I'll give them a call. And that really, you know, those clients, they don't have anything. They're not getting paid to to promote that property manager. So they'll generally tell you, obviously the property manager is going to give you somebody that they've worked well with, but they'll generally give an accurate, more or less picture of working with that property manager.
Yeah. I would say, well, a couple things. Number one is I actually have a document that I give people. It's the top 20 questions to ask a property manager before you hire them.
Oh,
so,
nice.
As an example, what's the price point of properties you manage? If I've got a property that's a $2,000 a month unit and you manage $300 a month units, you may not give the same level of service. What's your average vacancy time? What's your average eviction rate? What's your average cost for make ready? Like, these are questions and what you're trying to, and it's 20 questions. I mean, I'm happy to send it to you and you can send it to anyone who asks, but it's, you know, you, when you have a tenant, you screen that tenant. Don't you think you should screen that partner? Because that's what they are. They're really business partners with you. And you've got to, you know, it should not be adversarial. It should be like, hey, do we all agree that this is my goal as a business owner is to get this property at a, you know, 7% occupancy rate, a 1% eviction rate. Do we all agree that that's the goal? Because sometimes you hire someone because they're the cheapest. It's like, what if you had to get surgery and you were driving down the street one day and a doctor's out there flipping a sign and says 50% off today, would you pull in? No. But yet you'll do that with your financial life. You won't trust your life with a kook doctor, but you'll do it with financial. So you've got to pre-screen the property managers just like you pre-screen the tenants. Make sure that their business model aligns with yours, because that, you know, and I would, just because you hand it over to a property management company does not let you abdicate the leadership of your own business. They should be feeding you information. And some people say like, oh, my property manager doesn't talk to me. I'm like, that's bad leadership on your part. They work for you. You are the client. Did you have an expectation meeting with the property manager before you even hired them? This is what I expect of you. I want weekly, bi-monthly, whatever it is, meetings. These are the data points I need to pull from. So they, you may say, you know, John, you suck as a property manager. And he's going to go, you know what, Steve, we've always sucked. You just never asked. So you've got to set the expectations and interview them, going back to that. But I'm happy to share that, because that really will, if you're asking them questions about their numbers, because business is math, right? If they don't know any of those metrics in those questions, that right there is a red flag. If he spits off numbers saying, yeah, we're 20%, 7%, 1% eviction rate, you're going, okay, at least they know their numbers. That's really the first thing that you're looking for, is does this company track metrics? That's kind of the underlying tone of the questions.
Yep. And I mean, for anybody who is interested, if you have that on your website, we can send them to your website, because yep. I do feel like that'd be a great resource for people. And I like that you said, don't abdicate the throne, because that is, you know, I couldn't have said it better myself. A lot of people, when they get property managers, they think, you know, my job's done.
Like, I'm done. Like, don't call me. Don't text me. It's like, that's your business. If that's what you want to do, then own stock. But that's not, to me, is not being a responsible business owner. And when you own real estate, you own a business. Yep. And I just think that when people say like, oh, my property manager ripped me off, I'm like, no, let's clarify this. You were a bad owner and you were a bad leader to that property management company. If you saw the data and the metrics and it was telling you something, that's on you to step in. So I don't agree when people say that, because, you know, they may be a shitty management company. I'm not saying they're not, but it's your company. And at the end of the day, the management company, you fire them, but you still have the problem. You still have to deal with the issue and fix it, because it's your property. And that's where I think people misstep, is they don't realize that it's their business still.
Yep. Yeah. And for our, you know, for our RV mobile home parks, we meet with our property manager weekly. You know, this is different because they're not third party. We have them on site, but for like self-storage, we have a monthly recurring meeting every month. I get in there, we talk about numbers, we talk about operations, all that stuff. So it's really not hard to work with a property manager, but you do have to put those systems in place. You have to put those meetings in place, just to make sure that you guys are on the same page. So I took a peek at the clock. We're running out of time, but I don't want to move. I don't want to move into the quick question round quite yet. I got a couple more questions here.
Okay.
The first one, you said you're still a pilot. That is intense, because it sounds like you're doing a lot of other stuff. So let's talk about balance real quick. I know that you also do coaching, so I'm sure you talk to other people about how to balance their life, how to balance their W-2 with their investing. What tips can you give about, you know, the balance of W-2 and investing life.
Yeah. So I fly a Boeing 777 all over the world for a particular airline. And I tell people that there's no such thing that if you love doing it, that you should stop. I think a lot of people have this illusion that, hey, Steve, you sold a business for seven figures. You make all this money. Why do you still fly? Because I love it. Where is it written that I have to quit what I love doing just because of a certain digit in my bank account? That's number one. Number two, I don't believe in balance. I'm not a balanced person. I believe in focus, finish, and pivot. When I'm flying a plane, you don't want me on the phone coaching someone. You want me flying the plane and landing. When I'm coaching someone, you don't want me talking about flying. When I'm in a business deal, you don't want me in the gym. So I just think that we have to, sometimes we think of balance as this harmony. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with that. I think that we should be very focused and intent on what we're doing, like our conversation right here. And then when we're done, you pivot. Yep. So I think you can get a lot more done by monotasking than multitasking. And so I've just learned that myself. And so that's how I do that.
Nice. And I would say, I actually generally perform better when I am, when there's more in my life to do, you know, to an extent, because if I only have one property that I'm managing or trying to do, then and all my attention is going to that property, then I'm just like, you know, I procrastinate. I don't like do the work at, you know, when I should be doing it, because there's just not that much work to do. And it's, so you really do need to fill your schedule, with things that are, you know, that kind of, that are appropriate to the amount of energy the task requires. So
agreed.
All right. So that does get us to the end of the question round. At least we're going to have to go into the quick question round. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Let's do it. Starts with books. I'm a big bookie, so give me two recommendations, one for general life wisdom and one for real estate specific.
General life wisdom, believe it or not, I like 10X.
Grant Cardone. And
real estate specific, I don't know if it's considered real estate, but I would say The E-Myth.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's what's his name? It's Berger.
Michael Gerber.
Gerber, there we go. Both good good books. I haven't read 10X yet, but it has been on my list for a while. All right, moving on. This one is for your younger self. So let's go back to the Steve who, let's say, back to 2001. He was just furloughed. Go back to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
Take bigger action.
Great. I love it. Take bigger action. I could, that's probably what I would tell my earlier self too, is just don't be afraid. Don't start small, especially when it comes to real estate, because small is actually, said it 1,000 times on this podcast, small, there's more risk to small properties than there are to large properties.
And you're not taking it seriously when you're small.
Exactly. All right. Moving on. This one, United States, a lot of square miles out there, a lot of opportunity. Give me one metro you're most excited about investing in today.
Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas. The tried and true. Houston, even though it's, what is it, like however many millions of people live there, it's still, is it double digit growth? Or it's got to be single because that's too big. It's double digit?
I think they say 11 people a day are moving here.
That is absolutely ridiculous.
And it's because it's just a very balanced city. I mean, I can go on and on why the metrics make sense. But the other reason is there's so much land to build. It's not restricted by size, so they can keep building that keeps prices down. But it's also, it's a very business friendly. It's a very economic city. There's a lot of pluses to it. I'm not from here originally. I live here now, but it hits a lot of data metric points that make sense.
Yeah. I own a few properties in Dallas, and I'd never been to Texas before I bought those properties. And I was surprised at how just expansive it is out there. A lot of land. All right. That moves us to the next question. This is your mentors. None of us are islands. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. So who is one person or multiple people who have contributed the most to your career today?
Brad Sugars, Marshall Silver, John Burley.
Perfect. And was that through real estate or was it just generally?
Two of them. One of them was business coaching that showed us how to grow and scale our business. One of them is mindset and one of them is real estate.
Nice. I love it. All right. This is the third to last question. This is your own strength. We are all gifted with Superman strengths that we give to this world. So what is your Superman strength?
I would say it's my ability to communicate and network. That's probably one of my strengths. Is I'm a big believer in networking. Everybody knows I know someone. I'm connected by many, many different people, many, many different industries. I could pick up my phone and make a phone call to Brad Lee, Iron Cowboy. I mean, just you name it. And I can get one more phone call to the next person I need.
Nice. It's seven handshakes away from Steve Rosenberg.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we talked about people we knew before right?
Yeah, that's true. You, it is the truth. All right, that moves us to the second to last question. And this is, I lost my spot. I do this too often. There we go. Tools form the backbone of every business. So what is one tool you could not live without?
My Google Calendar.
Calendars. You know, not many people say that, but it is probably the tool that I would choose too. If I don't have it on my calendar, I don't do it.
That's happened. Yeah.
My girlfriend gets so pissed off about this because she'll tell me to do something and then I just completely forget because it's not on my calendar.
I have an assistant and, you know, I fly all over the world. I'm in different time zones. I mean, she controls my calendar. If I'm gone or something, she moves stuff and does everything. So I rely on other people to control my day, which is helpful for me so that, again, I don't have to take focus away from what I'm doing. I just see what's next on my calendar.
Perfect. All right, that leads us to the very last question. I know you do coaching, so this can, you know, you can expound about a little bit on this. So give us the best way that people can get in contact with you. And then what do you do in the coaching realm? How can people expect, you know, what can they expect to get from you? All that stuff.
Yeah, so they can go to my website. It's steverosenberg.com, which is rozenberg.com, or any social media channel. If you find me, you'll see me. And what I do is, I would say my main focus is showing people how to become that successful person. The tactics of being a real estate investor is easy. If you want to build $1 million or $5 million or $20 million business, but you're a $50,000 CEO in here, it doesn't matter. You're never going to make it. So the first thing is who do you have to become to be that successful person? That's number one. And number two, I take my 30 years of experience of being an international airline pilot, and I show people how to make their businesses run without them through systems, processes, procedures, and checklists. Just the same way that airlines run, I can show people that if you can't walk away from your business for 3 hours, 3 days, or 3 weeks, you don't own a business, you own a job. And it's probably a very low-paying job that nobody wants, because the more valuable you are to your business, the less valuable it is to anybody else. And so the whole thing we're doing is, a lot of people think that we're doing real estate, we're buying businesses. A lot of people will say, I'm doing it for freedom. I disagree with that statement. If you want freedom, you could sell all of your stuff today and go live in the park and you'll have all the freedom. But what you won't like is the memories that freedom creates. So what we're really doing is we're using money to buy freedom, to buy memories. So I show people, how do you buy memories? Because when we die or whatever it is we think we do, we're not taking any of our freedom. We're taking our memories. So instead of, you know, when I coach people, I get them to understand that in the beginning of the year, figure out what memories you want to buy this year, whether it's dinner in Greece, whether it's, you know, going to Rio de Janeiro, whether it's, you know, Rolling Stones in Wembley Stadium, buy the memories. But you've got to become that person that builds the business that runs without you to be able to do that. So I do masterminds. I do very high level masterminds where I bring people in for a 3-day event. I've got an event coming up in February. This will be at Brad Lee's headquarters in Lightspeed VT in Las Vegas. And I show people how to become that person. But more importantly, I give them actual tangible things that they can do to make their businesses run without them. And so that's kind of where I go with that, because whether you're a real estate investor, a plumber, an HVAC roofer, doesn't matter. You own a business and that business runs under a certain chassis. And there's marketing, there's sales, there's operations, accounting, and there's leadership. Those five things you have to become a master at to be able to build the business, to have the life that you want, to create the memories. So that's what I do.
Perfect, man. I love it. So if you guys want to get in contact with Steve, I will put that URL in the show notes. Again, it's steverosenberg.com in the show notes. So just click the little more in the description. That'll pull down the full description. And in there, you can find Steve's URL. Right on, Steve. Well, thank you again for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And for everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have any questions whatsoever, reach out to me, Gabe, at therealestateinvestingclub.com. Other than that, I hope you guys have an absolutely fantastic week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.